Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, August 19th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MISD may not need as much at-home learning, by Stuart Doreen. While Midland ISD will start the school year with at-home or virtual learning, it might be less than 4 weeks before students begin to make their return to campus. Midland ISD central office staff said at Monday's school board meeting that they will consider a phased-in approach to bringing students back to campus if conditions allow, specifically the rate at which coronavirus is in the community. There has been public pressure over the last week, including the creation of a petition that calls for kids to return to campus following 4 weeks in at-home learning. Earlier this month, it was stated that the district will start 4 weeks of at-home learning, and there was a possibility of another 4 weeks if conditions didn't improve. School board members also talked Monday evening about response from the community concerning the district's reentry process that is forcing families to take responsibility for supervising their children's schooling. I'm aware that many families in our community aren't ready for their children to return to school in person, said Katie Joyner, the creator of the petition, and I applaud the district for offering the online academy in order to do that. However, there is currently no option offered by the district for those families who need help supervising the learning of their children during the school day. It was in response to the dialogue about the lack of options that Midland ISD staff, specifically Chief of Staff Katie Atkins and Superintendent Orlando Riddick, said they were looking at the potential of a blended model with students being phased in. The blended model calls for dividing students into A and B groups. While one group is on campus, the other is participating in at-home learning. District officials showed the board a phased-in approach, dividing the student body into four groups, pre-K through third and life skills students, the remainder of elementary school students, junior high students, and high school students. During the conversation with MISD staff, board members learned more about the metrics being used for reentry decisions, including that there were gaps in the amount of time between the information provided by the city and existing conditions inside the community. Riddick told the board the last reports he had seen showed a positivity rate of 12% from the hospital's metrics and 20% from the city. He also said the report from the city was from August 9th. Last week, the city reported its lowest number of coronavirus cases in more than a month. On Monday, the city reported the fewest cases for a month in more than 2 months. The city said in a press release on Monday that it didn't show a gap in reporting versus the conditions on the ground, as it stated in its reports. Today's new cases are reflective of lab results from August 15th to 17th, Saturday through Monday. There was concern from the board on both sides. Trustee Robert Marquez said the district should err on the side of student safety. The school district has stated that the positivity rate isn't below 5% and other factors aren't where they need to be to allow for on-campus learning. Marquez said he wasn't willing to sacrifice his grandchildren to prove a point, and he requested that the community display patience during these tough times. Brian Murray, whose wife is a teacher, stated he wants parents and students, and not the school board, to make the decision to be on campus. This article is entitled, MISD Board to Continue Riddick's Evaluation. After a four-hour-long executive session, trustees vote to meet again on Friday, by Stuart Doreen. The evaluation of Superintendent Orlando Riddick will continue. After about 4 hours of meeting in executive session, the Midland ISD board came out and voted to meet again Friday on the evaluation item. I move that we not extend Mr. Riddick's contract and that we continue discussion of this item at a specially called meeting on Friday at 2:30 p.m., said John Kennedy, making the motion after midnight Monday. The motion was seconded and unanimously approved. The meeting ended at 12:08 a.m. Tuesday. State law allows school boards to talk about personnel issues in executive or closed session. MISD trustees started the executive session discussions which included Riddick's evaluation, at about 8 p.m. It is not known whether board members were talking about the evaluation the entire time or whether there were other matters on the agenda. According to the Texas Association of School Boards website, trustees can meet in executive session to discuss the following: attorney consultation, real property deliberations, prospective gifts negotiations, personnel, employee versus employee complaints, personally identifiable student information, medical or psychiatric records, security personnel, devices, audits, information resource technology security, emergency management, assessment instruments, and economic development negotiations. The superintendent evaluation was the final item on the board's agenda. After the closed session, trustees came back into the sixth-floor meeting room at Central Office in downtown Midland. Kennedy made his motion, members voted, and Board President Rick Davis adjourned the meeting. Riddick was hired in 2017. His contract runs from July 1, 2019 through June 2022. His salary is $275,000, the same as when he was hired. This article is entitled "Feeding America CEO Visits West Texas Food Bank" by J.C. Lewis. Odessa. The CEO of Feeding America, Claire Babineau Fontenot, toured West Texas's Food Bank Odessa location Tuesday because she said she wanted to acknowledge the nonprofit's innovative leadership and to thank residents for stepping up their support. "Not only are they, the West Texas Food Bank staff, making an impact right here in your backyards with your neighbors next door, but as a result of the innovation and leadership that comes from here, they are making an impact across the United States," she said. Babineau Fontenot, who spent time speaking with Executive Director Libby Campbell, said that by supporting the local food bank, people in turn are supporting their neighbors, something West Texas is known for. She said much of rural America has been hurt by the pandemic, but the West Texas Food Bank serves rural communities and an urban center. "One of the things we have had to reckon with is that there are unique challenges in certain areas of the country," Babineau Fontenot said. "We, Feeding America, are uniquely positioned to be helpful. One of those areas that is struggling right now and has been in plain sight for a while is rural America. Distribution, volunteer service, and intake of resources have all changed during the pandemic," she said. "We have had to make adjustment in a lot of areas," Babineau Fontenot said. "When we first started learning about the pandemic, there were certain things I knew were going to happen. I knew this network of food banks, so that I am so privileged to serve with, was going to step up. I knew that when the American public understood the need, that the public would stand up to." Feeding America, a network of 200 food banks, including West Texas Food Bank, is the nation's largest domestic hunger relief organization, according to its website. This article is entitled "Planning and Zoning OK's Bettenbau Plan for Smaller Lots Houses" by Mella McEwen. Members of the Planning and Zoning Commission approved Bettenbau Homes' request for a zone change at Tin Trail and North Fairgrounds Road as it seeks to build smaller, more affordable homes. The zone change was requested for a 15.7-acre tract of land presently zoned SF3, Single Family Dwelling District, which mandates lot sizes no smaller than 5,500 square feet. Bettenbau requested a zone change to PD, Planned Development District, for housing development to offer smaller lots for a smaller house plan. The proposed subdivision will have a total of 80 residential lots and a common area. Under the zone change, Bettenbau would be allowed to plat 34 lots with a width of 45 feet, ranging in areas from 5,001 to 5,175 square feet. "Our rationale for wanting to go with this zoning to smaller lots is to be able to build smaller homes that would continue to be single-family, three-bedroom, two-bath homes, but with a square footage of 1,100 to 1,200 square feet. A little smaller than our normal product," Ronnie Wallace with Bettenbau told commissioners during their virtual meeting. He said the plan is in response to economic conditions throughout West Texas. Planning and Zoning Commission Chairman Josh Sparks asked what would be the smallest house available if the zoning was not changed. And Wallace said Bettenbaugh's smallest affordable house would be 1,350 square feet. Asked by Sparks what the demographics would be of a buyer for this smaller home, Wallace said it would offer additional opportunities for first-time home buyers, young families, a young couple, or a single buyer. He said the product had recently launched in Lubbock and had been well received. Chris Berry with Bettenbaugh said some of the 1,100 square foot plans would sell for about $168,000 compared to about $184,000 for the 1,300 square foot plan, resulting in a savings of about $15,000 and lower costs to develop a smaller lot. Sparks was not convinced, saying he wasn't sure he agreed with the idea of making cuts to what is already a smaller footprint in the SF3 code. "I'm not sure that's something we want as a city," he said. "We need to have those homes. We can call them starter homes. I also see the common area is even smaller than the smaller lots. I'd much rather see a larger common area, especially if you're fitting in smaller homes. As someone who has small children, being able to go to the common area in the place you live is important." He also expressed skepticism about the proposed savings, saying he didn't think the amount Berry and Wallace mentioned was attainable. In the end, the request passed by a 4-2 vote. Bettenbaugh had an easier time with its request for a zone change from 01 office district to LR, local retail district, on a total of 16 lots on North State Highway 349 and Occidental Parkway, to develop a retail district as a buffer between residential housing and State Highway 349. Berry told the commissioners the developer felt developing retail on those lots would be better suited to Highway 349 and the traffic. The request received unanimous approval. In the meeting's final hearing, Aaron Bureau Land Surveyors received unanimous approval for its proposed preliminary plat, a residential replat of two lots into a single lot at 607 South Baird Street. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled, MISD Parents Can Apply for Free and Reduced Price Lunch. Applications may be submitted online, from staff reports. Midland ISD is currently accepting free and reduced price meal applications. All parents received an email containing a direct link to the application. The application can also be found by visiting the Child Nutrition Services website at midlandisd.net/cns and clicking on the meal applications banner. Parents wishing to obtain a paper application should contact their campus. As a reminder, parents must have an appointment to visit campuses during this time, so please call ahead. Many parents may not realize they are eligible and could be saving money each month, CNS Director Victoria Beck said. CNS staff serve wholesome meals at breakfast and lunch. Breakfast is free at each campus. For the 2020-21 school year, elementary school lunches will be $3.15 and secondary school lunches will be $3.40. Reduced price lunches for elementary and secondary schools will be 40 cents. Prices and lunch menus can be found at midlandisd.net/cns. This is the coronavirus page. This article is entitled, City Reports 5 New Coronavirus Cases, by Stuart Doreen. The Midland Health Department reported there were only 5 new confirmed cases of coronavirus on Tuesday. That number appears to be one of the smallest daily totals since June 10th, when there were 3 cases. On that particular day, the number of total cases during the pandemic had reached 180. On Tuesday, the city reported the total number of cases was 2,953. The 5 cases could be seen as more data showing a community coming off the coronavirus spike. The number of cases Monday was well off the pace set for a Monday, which reflects cases reported over a weekend, going back to mid-June. Last week, the number of cases was a low mark for going back 1 month, and the week included a 17-case day on Thursday. The Health Department also reported Tuesday there were 987 isolated cases in Midland County, along with 1,365 recovered, no change from Monday, 396 under investigation, and 145 unable to locate slash refused, and 60 COVID-19-related deaths. Health department officials will be available at a press conference later this week to answer questions about the number of active cases and relatively lower numbers of recoveries. The health department reported that the new cases Tuesday were reflective of lab results from the same day. Coronavirus report: cases Monday 60, cases Tuesday 5, total cases 2,953. This article is entitled, Texas Families Have Until Friday to Apply for Food Aid, by Stacy Fernandez, Texas Tribune. Governor Greg Abbott extended the deadline to apply for the pandemic EBT card, which pays $285 for each student who received free and reduced-price meals, to Friday. The federal benefit for lower-income students is intended to fill the gap caused when schools shut down in the spring because of the pandemic. The deadline had previously been extended from the end of June to the end of July. Food policy advocates said these extensions are necessary to give more time to the families of about 800,000 eligible Texas children who have yet to apply for the federal program. As of July 17th, a little more than 20% of the 3.6 million eligible Texas schoolchildren had not been signed up for the program, according to Texas Department of Agriculture data, said Rachel Cooper, a senior policy analyst with Every Texan, a left-leaning think tank previously known as the Center for Public Policy Priorities. We're pleased with how many families have so far received this benefit, but there are still thousands of eligible families in our communities that can apply for assistance, Wayne Salter, Texas Health and Human Services Access and Eligibility Services Deputy Executive Commissioner, said in a written statement. While some Texas counties, including Hidalgo, Harris, Fort Bend, and Nueces, have reached upward of 88% of eligible applicants, others, including Williamson, Potter, and Ector counties, are hovering around 67%, according to data from the Agriculture Department. Thousands of families are still applying every day, but with all of the chaos and disruption of the last few months, many still don't know they qualify, Cooper said. In addition to the online application, the state also has a phone number families can call to fill out applications over the phone. Translators are available if needed. Cooper said it's likely that many immigrant families have hesitated to apply because they don't know that their immigration status will not bar them from aid or hurt their chances to become legal residents under the public charge rule, which penalizes immigrants who have used public benefits for a certain period of time. We know that families are struggling right now, Cooper said. Food insecurity rates have skyrocketed for families in Texas, and so any additional money that they can put toward food helps. And this is one way to get help to those families and kids right away. Disclosure: Every Texan has been a financial supporter of the Texas Tribune, a nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization that is funded in part by donations from members, foundations, and corporate sponsors. Financial supporters play no role in the Tribune's journalism.
Local. Private Dome Show. Piper Poe, from left, Amanda Poe, Tyler Heineman, and Calum Stone watch a dome show Monday at the Blakemore Planetarium. The Museum of the Southwest has opened the planetarium for private dome shows and viewings of the Science on a Sphere installation. A story and more photos may be seen at MRT.com and in a future edition. Synergy to reopen Thursday. Synergy Entertainment in Midland will be reopening on Thursday. Opening weekend movies will be Unhinged and Tax Collector, followed by New Mutants on August 28 and Tenet on September 3. There will be a limited menu and limited game floor, according to a press release. Private cinema buyouts are available. Firefighters launch virtual Fill the Boot. The International Association of Firefighters and Professional Firefighters Association of Midland, Local 4405, have launched a virtual Fill the Boot, which will take the place of the annual in-person campaign for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Instead of placing donations in boots held up by Midland firefighters at intersections across Midland, residents can donate at https://filltheboot.donordrive.com. www.mediaclub.com/participant/Midland. The virtual campaign continues through the end of the year, said Greg Wells with Midland Local 4405. Their goal is $5,000, according to the website. Library branches need volunteers. These select area volunteer opportunities and events are provided by MSS Connections, a program of MSS made possible by the Warren Charitable Foundation. For more information, visit mssconnections.org. Hispanic Cultural Center of Midland needs volunteers to help during the President's Cup Golf Tournament, which is planned for September 26. Volunteers will receive free breakfast and lunch. Contact Charlene Romero McBride at 683-4226 or hispanicculturalcenter@gmail.com. Midland County Public Library needs volunteers for youth services at both branches and circulation at Centennial Branch. Volunteers must be at least 18 and undergo a background check. Call Centennial Branch at 742-7445 or Downtown Branch at 688-4323. Sharing Hands, a respite experience, needs child care volunteers on Friday nights starting in October in both Midland and Odessa. Volunteers care for special needs kids and their siblings 5 to 10 p.m. on respite nights. Dinner is provided. Contact Laura Pittinger at 818-1258 or LPITTINGER at sharewtx.org. Mark's annual Hope in One Golf Tournament is September 22. To purchase tickets, visit https://e.givesmart.com/events/HQ7 or contact David Stevens at 695-9901 or dstephens@marctexas.org. Norman Elite is hosting camp. Norman Elite is hosting a virtual learning camp today through September 15. The camp is 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. weekdays. The cost is $110 weekly. Register at normanelite.com. Love notes being collected for seniors. National Senior Citizen Day is Friday, and to mark the occasion, Senior Life Midland wants to distribute love notes to the homebound seniors who are served by Meals on Wheels. About 600 notes are needed, said Tracy Renton, Development Director for the nonprofit. Anyone who would like to participate may drop off notes at Senior Life, 3301 Sinclair Avenue, before Friday. A box will be placed near the doors. For more information, call 689-6693. Grocery chain raises $100,000 for March of Dimes. The United Family and its customers recently raised $103,407 for March of Dimes, according to a press release from the grocery chain. The campaign, in which customers could add $1 donation to their bill, ran July 1 through 12 at United Family locations in Texas and New Mexico. Customers in the Permian Basin region donated $4,164.51, according to the release. The United Family stores in Midland are United Supermarkets and Market Street. Other donation totals are Abilene, San Angelo, $13,406.48, Amarillo, Panhandle, $20,924.72, Lubbock, South Plains, $17,821.29, Dallas, Fort Worth, Wichita Falls, $15,865.09, and New Mexico, $31,225.49.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, August 19th. Initiative to include Midland Memorial. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. The POWER initiative, focusing on early childhood readiness, an AVID leadership coaching update, and a presentation from the Texas Impact Network were in the spotlight during an education partnership of the Permian Basin Leadership Team meeting on Tuesday. The meeting was conducted via Zoom and also included a review of school opening plans from Ector County, Midland, and Greenwood ISDs. The POWER Initiative stands for the Power of Worlds and Early Reading. The purpose of the initiative is to encourage the community to read, speak, and interact with children as frequently as possible, beginning at birth. The venture was launched with Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center earlier this year. Now, Adrian Vega, Executive Director of the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin, said Midland Memorial Hospital is poised to join in January 2021. The bags include a Centers for Disease Control Milestone Moments book, CDC age-level baby book, a scholastic book, O is for Oil by Vega, baby toy keys, a baby bib, articles, a magnet, and website information for additional resources. Vega said the end goal of the POWER Initiative is to improve kindergarten readiness rates. United Way of Midland applied to be a Smart Start community a year or two ago, Vega said. Search results Start Smart Texas is a partnership between the United Ways of Texas and Texas PBS created to support Texas communities that are part of the Campaign for Grade Level Reading, as well as other Texas cities to achieve improved reading scores across the state. The Smart Start Texas Communities website states, quote, they were granted this distinction, but because this is a broader effort for our entire region, we are going back to a Start Smart group at the state level so that we can become a Start Smart region. Smart Start Permian Basin, since all three hospitals will be participating. With that said, we are going to need to raise the funds for all three hospitals to participate starting January 1st. We're looking at raising about $75,000 to $80,000 for about 8,000 bags. It's about $10 a bag because we're looking at about 8,000 births going into next year, Vega said. The POWER bags came out of the partnership's Early Childhood Action Network. Since January, Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center have been providing POWER bags to every new mother in the community. Vega noted that Chevron and XTO Energy and others are huge supporters of the effort. Quote, we have a fundraising group that's trying to raise money, but Chevron committed last year. They gave about $10,000 and they paid for some of the books. But they're such a big believer in this effort because it's going to impact the entire region. They have committed to provide us some seed money to start working with a grant writer, Vega said. The idea, he said, is to fund the whole initiative. Quote, so what we're shooting for is to receive funds that would allow us to have a POWER coordinator or even a POWER staff, if you will, Vega said. Lorraine Perryman, co-chair of the Education Partnership with Colin Sewell, said Educate Midland also is on board with the POWER Initiative. The Education Partnership of the Permian Basin is a nonprofit organization that is focused on supporting and improving the quality of education throughout the Permian Basin from cradle to career, its website says. Educate Midland is a similar model and organization. Quote, funding for a grant writer is a game changer, Perryman said, so we can flesh out this whole POWER initiative and staff that up so we can roll it out throughout the entire region, end quote. Amy Anderson, District Director for AVID for Ector County ISD, gave an update on AVID leadership coaching, which started last school year as a way for community members to mentor sixth graders. Anderson said coaching this year would be offered through Google Meets. Quote, Each community coach will be paired with an ECISD host, and they will have 3 to 4 students in their group, so we hope to have a pilot and run that for 6 weeks, back-to-back, Anderson said. To start, the sessions would be at the same time on the same day each week, and the community coaches would have the same students. Quote, "We would have a pilot program at each campus. That way, when we return in the spring, we can serve more students in a larger capacity, but we definitely want to make a small little pilot in October through November, finishing before Thanksgiving, so we can work out all the little details," Anderson said. Another aim of the coaching program is to build relationships with middle school students so mentors can follow them into high school and post-secondary, quote, "and really see your efforts pass to fruition as they become leaders of our community," Anderson said. Anderson said coaches will be given an open topic, lessons, and support if they feel like they need it. Quote, "but otherwise, you're the expert, so you're just going to share it," Anderson said. The initial program started off with handshaking, but this will be geared to the virtual world, like when to mute, having cameras off or on, and appearance, what we look like. Quote, "and we have to be aware of how we're coming across on the screen. In the past, I've talked about handshakes and all of those things, so you're just going to guide them through that with your experience and expertise. Another one will be time management, so how do you manage your time? You're just going to share your career with them, how you got to where you're going, how you managed your time in college, how you manage your time now. It really doesn't look that different, so all these skills that we're trying to get them to do in middle school, paying it forward to their success in high school, as well as college, and into their career," end quote. In the virtual world, Anderson said, coaches can serve multiple campuses if they want. Quote, "we hope to be recruiting and have everything ready by October 1st, Anderson said. "Those who are interested should contact Debbie Lieb, ECISD Community Engagement Specialist, at 432-456-7059. If coaches participated before, Anderson said they are good to go this year. Family Health Clinic celebrates 25 years. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. It's faced ups and downs over the years, but the Medical Center Hospital Family Health Clinic is still serving the community after 25 years. David Garcia, Family Health Clinic Executive Director and Director of Governmental Affairs, said he has been with the health system for about 15 years and in his current role for 5. The clinic began in 1995 following a community needs survey that showed there was a need for healthcare services, particularly for uninsured and underserved residents. Quote, "it was at that point that Medical Center Hospital began at this location providing primary care services to the residents of Ector County," Garcia said. The clinic is located at 840 West Clement Street, another location at West University Boulevard and Farm to Market Road 1936, opened in 2014, he said. When the Clement Street location opened, Garcia said few physicians and providers would open their doors to Medicaid patients. Quote, "so as far as pediatrics was concerned, having the location that would serve Medicaid patients was something that was needed as well," he added. The clinic is funded by Medical Center Health System. Quote, "we are participants in a state family planning grant, and we also got word that we would be participating as a contractor with the Texas State Primary Health Care Grant. So those are 2 additional funding sources that will be coming our way for primary care," Garcia said. The Primary Health Care Grant will provide uninsured patients with primary services with little to no co-pays. At the Clement Street spot, There are 20 to 25 employees, and the clinic offers pediatrics, family medicine, obstetrics, and gynecology, and an endocrinologist comes in one day a week. Quote, "She's here one day a week, and that schedule is full," Garcia said. The location on University Boulevard and FM 1936 has 10 employees and offers family medicine and some OB-GYN services as well. Between the two facilities, there are 8,000 patients registered, and they log about 20,000 visits a year across all service lines, Garcia said. In October 2017, Medical Center Hospital permanently shut down the dental clinic at the Family Health Clinic and discontinued an ultrasound service at both Family Health Clinics after the Joint Commission did a survey of the entire hospital. There was a lack of documentation they have to keep for their dental instruments, which prompted the immediate closure, but it was unrelated to the standard of care, an Odessa American article stated. Garcia said the clinic now contracts with Odessa Family Dental for dental services. Quote, "We provide preventative dental service to our program patients. It applies to any patient of ours that is interested in getting a dental checkup. We do provide them with that service," Garcia said. Pediatrics makes up the biggest portion of patients the clinic see, followed by those who are over 18, and OB-GYN is the smallest. Quote, "You'd be surprised just how many long-term residents in this area are still learning about what we do here. So getting the word out is, I think, very important for the public. We offer some great services here that not a lot of people really know about," Garcia said. In 2008, the clinic received a federally qualified health center look-alike status, and Garcia said they intend to apply for the full FQHC grant status as soon as the next award window opens. The clinic also is pursuing a patient-centered medical home designation. The federally qualified health center look-alike status enables the clinic to receive enhanced Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement, but as a full grantee, it would be eligible to receive federal grant money in addition to enhanced reimbursement. The patient-centered medical home is a gold standard for primary care. Many people hear about the clinic by word of mouth, but also through community events that it is involved in. During those events, the clinic provides information on the services and affordable options it offers. Quote, "Since COVID, we've kind of put a hold on all the community things that we're involved with. It seems like we were constantly doing community events on weekends, and that's been a kind of a standstill since March," Garcia said. Garcia said he's glad to see the clinic has made it to 25 years. Quote, "The need is definitely there. I'm excited at what the next few years will bring to us," Garcia said. In the future, he's hoping the clinic will be able to expand its services to help more underserved and underinsured residents. Garcia noted that the clinic actually sees everyone, even those with commercial insurance. Quote, "We do offer a sliding fee scale. We call it our family assistance plan. It's based on income, and so copays for that program start at $15 and work their way up various levels depending on what income level an applicant lands in," Garcia said. He added that new patients are being accepted, especially in pediatrics. With the pandemic, the clinic has taken precautions to make sure children get in safely, are seen, and immunized. A new pediatrician, Dr. Atul Podal, will start in September. He replaces Dr. Eileen Sheridan Shaib. Quote, "He's filling some big shoes. We look forward to him starting next month," Garcia said. Dr. Dinesh Gowda at the MCH ProCare Healthy Kids Clinic, 3001 JBS Parkway, will see patients once a week, along with a nurse practitioner. Quote, "So we'll definitely be ready to accept new patients," Garcia said. Mary Anderson, a radiology technician at the clinic, said she is excited and proud that the clinic is marking its 25th anniversary. She wishes there could have been a larger celebration. Quote, "They did do something for the employees, which was nice," Anderson said. Anderson has been with Medical Center Health System for 28 years, 22 of those with the clinic. She has seen generations of patients grow up and bring their own children to the clinic. Quote, "This clinic is really a family to me, not only with the staff members that have come and gone and are still there, but with the patients. You get to know the patients, your regulars, so you just develop a rapport in and out of the clinic because you run into them all the time. It has been a very good place to work," Anderson said. UTPB hosting drive-through graduation. The University of Texas Permian Basin is having a drive-through graduation for spring and summer 2020 students Saturday at various times, depending on college, at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 Farm to Market Road, 1788. The College of Business commencement will be at 8 a.m., the College Nursing, Engineering, and Education at 9 a.m., and the College of Arts and Sciences at 10 a.m. Graduates will enter the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center parking lot from FM 1788 headed north. The graduates will be directed through the parking lot by UTPB police. Once they reach the front of the Wagner Noel, graduates will be directed to get out of their car, an email from communications manager Alexa Dunson said. The graduates are required to have a mask on and their cap and gown. Regalia is optional for this graduation. A volunteer will take a pre-filled-out card from the graduate that has their name and degree on it. From there, the graduate will be directed to an on-deck spot that will be marked for social distancing. They will grab their own diploma cover from the table by the stage. Once it's the graduate's turn to walk the stage, their name along with degree will be read through our sound system, the email detailed. Family and or friends who rode with the graduate will be able to turn their radio to 97.3 FM to hear the graduate's name read. Once on stage, the graduate will be able to remove their mask for a socially distanced photo with UTPB President Sandra Woodley. They will put their mask back on as they exit the stage. Graduates will then be greeted, socially distanced, by the Alumni Association, where they will receive an individually packaged graduation cookie and information about being an alumni. From there, they will get back into their car and will be directed on how to exit the parking lot. All May and August graduates received a party pack in the mail with koozies and "I Did It" sign, a graduation cap photo prop, and a special message from Woodley and the Alumni Association. Dunson stated that they received great feedback on that. Spring graduates have received their diplomas, and summer graduates should be receiving theirs in the mail soon, she stated in an email. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 3,889. Ector County negative, 17,331, out of 21,460 tested, with 240 pending. 62 deaths. Recovered, 3,082. Active cases, 745. Midland County, 2,948 confirmed cases, 60 deaths. Texas, 550,232 confirmed cases, with 4,500,645 tested. Total Texas deaths, 10,250. U.S. cases, 5,422,242 total confirmed cases and 169,870 deaths. Find out more online at co.ector.dx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TCTRJLF. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Online webinar. Odessa Links has scheduled the 7th annual community online webinar, Resiliency, Transforming Trauma into Healing, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Thursday. Guest speakers will be Dr. Karen Alter-Reed, Chandra Kintanar, and H. Reese Butler. The webinar is free. Sponsorship is available. To sponsor or more information, call 582-0099, email linksconference@gmail.com, or visit tinyurl.com/Y5Q9LGFK. The City of Odessa is currently accepting applications for the Business Assistance Program, $2,500 to $10,000 grants for small businesses financially impacted by COVID-19. For application or more information, call 335-4107 or visit www.odessa-tx.gov/COBAP. Keep Odessa Beautiful is calling for entries for the 6th annual Recycle Fashion Show. The event showcases creative, resource conservation-minded art and fashion designs. The intent of this event is to raise awareness on the importance of waste reduction through fashion in a fun, creative, and artistic way. Designers have the opportunity to create a design by reusing, repurposing, and recycling. Application deadline is October 5th. To apply, for rules, guidelines, or more information, visit keepodessabeautiful.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading Odessa for Wednesday, August 19th, 2020. Music students awarded McIntyre scholarships. Two college-bound Permian High School music students have been awarded J.R. McIntyre scholarships of $5,000 each. Arwen Weeks, a George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa graduate and Permian High School orchestra member, and Justice Dominguez, Permian High School band member, won the scholarships recently. Zem Neal, a member of the scholarship committee, said the fund can be used for any of the recipients' school costs, such as tuition. It is a one-time scholarship and they cannot reapply. Recipients must be music students at Permian and entering a college of their choice. The details of how selections are made from application by the student and who sits on the committee to make the decision is up to the band director, Neil said in an email. The alumni who funded the scholarships 15 years ago did it to honor McIntyre on his 80th birthday. He meant so much to so many of his band and orchestra students over the years. He was one of a kind, she stated. Weeks was in the PHS orchestra for 4 years, having played in Satin Strings and the Symphony Orchestra since her sophomore year. She graduated from New Tech Odessa High School with a 5.44 GPA and scored 1,370 on the SAT, ranked fourth in her class. Lettering as a sophomore, Weeks served as concertmaster of the Permian Symphony Orchestra since joining it, and the soloist for Satin Strings her junior and senior years. She placed in the All-Region Orchestra all 4 of her years, placing as high as 3rd chair her junior year and 4th chair her senior year. Weeks also earned a 1st Division rating for solo at UIL Solo and Ensemble all 4 of her years, and a first division ensemble for her last 2 years. Her sophomore, junior, and senior years, Weeks qualified her solo and ensemble to perform at UIL State Solo and Ensemble. There, Arwen earned the esteemed first division solo rating both years that she attended. She served on the leadership team as the orchestra's head librarian her junior year and was elected as morale officer her senior year. She was also a four-year member of the Permian Girls Varsity Track Team as an all-district hurdler and a member of the regional qualifying 1600-meter relay team. Weeks was also a member of the NewTek Odessa chapter of National Honor Society, as well as a regular tutor for NTO's Writing Center. She will be attending the University of Texas at Austin to pursue a degree in exercise science. There, she will play in the University Orchestra and the Echo String Quartet, her biography said. Dominguez is a member of the 2020 class at Permian and former principal flute player in the Permian High School's top symphonic band, as well as Permian's Symphony Orchestra. Throughout her years, Dominguez has also been a part of the Texas Music Educators Association All Region Bands and Orchestras for 4 years, a featured band soloist, a student leader in the Permian Band Leadership Team, and a Texas Music Scholar recipient. In addition, Dominguez has also been named a TMEA All-State member and competitor, ranking amongst the top 25 flutists in Texas for 3 consecutive years. She graduated this year ranking within the top 10% of her class and an associate degree in general studies from Odessa College, along with her diploma. She has decided to attend West Texas A&M University to study music education and performance, her biography said. What made Arwen stand out is she's been first chair from the beginning since she got here as a freshman, and she works hard, said PHS Orchestra Director Todd Barrage. She exemplifies the type of talent we want in the orchestra. She lives up to Mr. McIntyre's standards that he set. That's why everybody on the voting panel thought she was the best fit for the award. Barrage said this year's award is the largest so far, and he can't think of two better people to represent PHS. PHS band director Jeff Whitaker said he is grateful the scholarship has kept going all these years. Man charged with shooting firearm in air in central Odessa. The city of Odessa released the probable cause affidavit that detailed the events prior to more than a dozen law enforcement vehicles surrounding an orange pickup in the parking lot of a gas station Sunday afternoon. Jeremy Luna was arrested and charged with discharging a firearm in a certain municipality, a Class A misdemeanor, and false drug test falsification device, a Class A misdemeanor. There were more than a dozen Odessa Police Department and Texas Department of Public Safety patrol units that responded to a shots fired call at 5 p.m. Sunday at the DK note located at the intersection of 4th and Dixie, an OPD affidavit stated. An orange Toyota Tacoma reportedly matched the description of a vehicle involved in a shots fired call. The occupants of the Tacoma were Elias Lopez and Luna. Lopez gave verbal consent to search the vehicle, the affidavit stated. In the center console, officers located 2 bottles of fake urine to falsify drug tests. A firearm was in plain view, stuffed between the center console and passenger seat, which was identified as a Smith & Wesson SD9 9mm. A witness reportedly told officers that the Tacoma was driving south on Dixie Boulevard near 25th Street when the passenger leaned out of the vehicle and discharged a firearm in the air 5 times. Luna matched the description from the witness as being the person shooting the firearm. 5 empty shell casings were located in the area of Nimitz and Dixie, where the witness stated the shooting happened. Luna was arrested and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center at 10:09 a.m. Monday, jail records show. He has two bonds totaling $2,500 and was still in custody as of Tuesday afternoon. ECISD reports two new COVID cases. Ector County ISD reported two positive COVID-19 cases Tuesday. One was a student at Permian High School. The second is an employee at the New Tech Odessa building. The total number of cases reported since August 5th is now 21. New devices coming to ECISD campuses by Ruth Campbell. With the help of coronavirus relief funds, Ector County ISD has replaced most of its desktop computers that are at the end of their life cycle with laptops. Desktop computers are the boxes that sit underneath the desks, Chief Technology Officer Kelly Wilkes said. The first step is reducing student desktop computers and replacing them with Chromebooks or iPads. The ECISD Board of Trustees, August 11th, voted to approve an interlocal agreement with Region 4 for Operation Connectivity. This cooperative arrangement gives ECISD the ability to purchase devices for about half of the regular price. Through this opportunity, the district will order 5,825 iPads, 6,507 Chromebooks, and 1,000 MiFi devices for about $1.8 million. The regular prices for the same purchases would be closer to $4 million, the board recap said. Our new standard technology configuration will be Chromebooks for 3rd through 12th grade and then iPads for pre-K to 2nd grade, Wilkes said. There will be exceptions to that. For special programs, we'll still use desktops, like high-end graphic programs for newspaper and journalism, anything that requires a little bit more computer science courses. We have Chief Innovation Officer Jason Osborne, who has some virtual reality things that he will need some high-end computers for. But for the most part, we're moving toward Chromebooks and iPads for students, she added. Director of Instructional Technology Lauren Tavares said iPads are more developmentally appropriate for younger students. The students have an easier time navigating. It's a great way to teach them the skills to progress from an iPad and kind of just being those digital learners to the Chromebook as they get a little bit older, Tavares said. Wilkes said August 3rd that almost 1,300 devices had been taken off campuses. Tavares said teachers, staff, and parents are being asked to help students get in the habit of charging their devices at night, taking them to school the next day, and bringing them home again. This will be done in case school has to go completely virtual again due to the COVID-19 pandemic. We'll be one-to-one for students this year, so every student who needs a device will have a device, Wilkes said. Some students will opt to use their own device, which will be beneficial to us right now. Tavares said it will be good to start developing digital fluency at a young age. It's more than just click here, click here, click here, that kind of thing. It's helping them to be more career ready and using technology to improve their work, she added. Having the new technology will eventually make life easier for teachers, Tavares said. That really is going to depend on, first of all, just their comfort level with integrating technology in their instruction. We have some incredible teachers who are very, very comfortable with that and very good at that, but also supporting one another. We have had several opportunities this summer that we've seen a lot of teachers take advantage of, so our instructional technology team, along with several other departments, C&I, Curriculum and Instruction, and AVID, put on a summit for the teachers to attend. We had over 2,000 viewing hours of attendance, Tavares said. We had 57 different courses, and teachers could pick if they wanted to attend all day, an hour of the day. It was whatever they were interested in learning about. The district also is providing back-to-school training for teachers. Seesaw will be the pre-kindergarten through second grade software, and Google Classroom for third through 12th grade. I do think eventually it makes it easier. There is a huge learning curve to get there, but I've had several people contact me in the last couple of months saying, I'm finally listening to you, and it's getting better, and I love it, and why didn't I do this 3 years ago? It's fun to see them celebrate that and really take a hold of that and see how it can help students, Tavares said. It's a different way of teaching, but it's something where I think once people get started, they really do enjoy it and they can see the benefits. Wilkes said teachers have their own ways of instructing students. The tools just add value in other ways. Your style is your style. The way you teach is the way you teach. But the digital tools allow for flexibility and also a variety of choices for kids, Wilkes said. Tavares noted that there is optional insurance for student devices for damage, coverage, and theft. The insurance does not cover loss. Wilkes said the district hopes to replace 25% of the devices every year, so that you've got 25% at the end of life and 25% brand new. Wilkes said the district hopes to replace 25% of the devices every year, so that you've got 25% at the end of life and 25% brand new and everything in between. So every fifth year, those devices would leave. Police charged two men in connection to fatal motorcycle collision. Two men were arrested after they were reportedly involved in a motorcycle race that turned into a fatal collision earlier this month. Christopher Lee Sims, 38, and Tayson Trace Turner, 23, were each charged with racing on a highway resulting in death, a second-degree felony. The reported fatal collision happened around 10:01 p.m. August 7th near the intersection of 42nd and JBS Parkway, an Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed. As officers arrived at the scene, 21-year-old motorcyclist Juan Cedillos was pronounced dead. Witnesses reportedly told police that they saw three motorcycles traveling east on 42nd at a high rate of speed with what appeared to be a speed competition. A witness identified as Sims said that Cedillos and another sports bike started to race near the intersection of Tanglewood Lane and 42nd Street. The driver of the other sports bike was identified as Turner. Sims reportedly told police that he was on a Harley Davidson in the center lane on 42nd Street near Tanglewood Lane. Cedillos was in the left lane and Turner was in the right lane. Sims stated he left the light fast to rev his engine as he pulled away, leaving first. The other two bikes drove by Sims at a high rate of speed, switching lanes before Cedillos' fatal collision. Officers collected video from a nearby bank, the affidavit stated. In the video, Sims was in the center lane with Cedillos in the left before Turner pulled up to the light in the right lane. When the light turns green, Sims takes off at a high rate of speed before Turner and Cedillos. Video footage from Musical City Mall showed all three bikes were traveling at a high rate of speed. Measurements were taken between two poles in the video, which were found to be 326 feet apart. A time and distance formula was used to determine the speeds of the motorcycles in the segment of road. It was determined that Sims was going 77 miles per hour, Turner was going 86 miles per hour, and Cedillos was going 75 miles per hour, the affidavit stated. The video also showed when the bikes came into the frame that Cedillos was the first bike, followed by Turner and then Sims. By the time the bikes left the frame of the camera, Turner was passing Cedillos. Crash reconstruction reportedly showed that at the time of the fatal collision, Cedillos had a minimum speed of 63 miles per hour, which was based on the skid mark left and the distance from where he landed from the collision. From the video and witness statements, Sadios, Sims, and Turner had competed in a speed competition or an acceleration contest on their bikes, which played a factor in leading to the fatal collision. Turner was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center August 13th, had one bond totaling $50,000, and posted bail August 14th. Sims was booked into jail on Tuesday, had one bond totaling $50,000, and posted bail the same day, jail records show.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.